We're gonna skate to one song, one song only.
Nice, like, oh, sinister and ominous. Yeah, welcome to the Real Sports Guys, where real guys talk real sports. I am one of three hosts. Mark is a game changer in the house, one third of the illustrious three-man booth. And we're going to hold you down talking sports, regular guys, a lot of sports knowledge, regular perspectives, the internet corner boys taking you through the intersection where culture, politics, life, music, whatever you're thinking, where that all intersects with sports, we're going to take you there and show you how to navigate this particular area of the universe. So, yes, I am one-third of the illustrious three-man booth. I also have with me my man D. Wills. Holler at the people.
What's up, fellas? I got my CP3 ticker on, so if anything happens while we're in the show, we'll figure it all out. But I got that going, and I'm trying to make sure I'm not going past the unemployment line to see some more NFL coaches. They showing up early. Pink slips. I'm gonna wear something pink tomorrow, because everybody's in the pink slip early.
This is true. Sale on government cheese. I got my man, Field T, sports PhD. Where you at, man?
Man, I'm sitting here looking forward to basketball season. Had a bad week in fantasy football. Dropped out of both the playoffs. Made the playoffs. Lost in the opening weekend.
The playoffs? You kidding me?
Yeah. I want to thank our guest last week, Eric Hamilton. I've got some feedback this week from listeners. They're very thankful of his suggestion as far as the Seattle Seahawks defense and their kicker. A couple of guys that got them over the edge to make the playoffs or win that first-round matchup. So thanks a lot from our fantasy guru from KZ.
Hey, and we plan on having him back regularly. You know, he's a part of fam around here, and we aim to please. So anytime we have guests on that the listeners out there appreciate, we definitely bring them back as much as possible. D-Will, you had some good luck this past week with your
playoffs.
Fantasy football.
What talk about? Yeah, playoffs? You kidding me?
That's right. That's right. You can call me LaRusha if you want to. I made it on the final day. I had some craziness, though. I sat, and we were going back and forth, and I couldn't believe I did this. And this is a lesson. Go with your first instinct. You like they tell it to test, the first answer is the right answer you put down. I had Robinson for the Cowboys in the game. Miles Austin was reported to play. I thought he would cut into his stuff. I sat him on the bench. He blew up for 20 points. All I needed was 20 points to win this week. It would have just secured my playoff spot. Last night, sitting there watching the Rams and Lloyd, all he needed to do was give me 20 more yards. And towards the end of the game, he's standing on the sidelines. And all it felt to me like, I don't understand why they got him on the sidelines. And I was just like, I could not believe this. But thank goodness for the tiebreaker. I made it into the fourth spot, and now I face Ray in the first round. And he's talking junk already. I'm just trying to get my St. Louis Cardinal on.
Okay.
I'm trying to be like them, and we'll see. Stay tuned.
Okay. See, you gotta be careful that you're in the right mind state when you're making those decisions on game day. You don't want to be like Herman Cain.
I don't have facts to back this up.
You all make decisions when you in that kind of a mind state, man. You see where that brother at now. He on the sideline. So you in the game. You in the game. So, again, you all listen to the Real Sports Guys, where real guys talk real sports on Blog Talk Radio. Tuesday nights, 8:30 to 10:30, we always hold you down like we always do. If you want to join in the conversation at any time tonight, feel free to give us a call at 1-347-989-0844. And, you know, at the end of the day, we let Iron Mike Singletary speak for us.
I want winners.
All right? You can't come weak when you call in, all right? We want winners, all right? We want winners with solid takes, some solid information, some interesting perspective. If you ain't got that, you know, you can take a seat, all right? Take a seat, chill out on the sideline. We'll be all good. All right. So we're going to get into a segment we like to call the Funky Editorial, like we always do about this time.
Fellas, only one thing we need to say. Yes. Shall we say it, y'all?
Yes.
Melvin,
right.
Jimmy,
yes.
Coleman,
yes.
Ryan,
yes.
Sit.
Yes.
Everybody want to get funky one more time.
All right, this is going to be an NBA-heavy show. If you don't like the league, we love the league. If you don't like the league, you might have to listen to something else tonight because we're going to dig in. It's just so much news in the NBA. And we're going to talk about some other things as we always do. We're going to try and cover the gamut. Again, we are Internet Corner Boys. We're going to show you around the whole landscape. But we really got to walk you through everything that's going on in the NBA because there's a lot going on with the season getting ready to kick off on Christmas Day. Free agency opened up last Thursday, and it's just been a flurry of moves. So our first two segments, we're really going to dig into that. During the Funky Editorial, we have to talk about the CP3 situation. And I call it a situation because, I mean, I could call it a fiasco, a debacle. By calling it a situation, I feel like I'm being respectful to all parties involved. We can call it a lot of things. It's effed up, all right? It's effed up. We can call it a clusterfuck, whatever you want to call it. Whatever you want to call it, that's what you can call it. It's a messed up situation right now. So David Stern and the NBA own the New Orleans Hornets. And we kind of talked about this last week. They have a player, their number one player, one of the top players in the league, arguably the top point guard in the league. Will be a free agent at the end of the season. He's already expressed that he is not interested in re-signing with the team. So at this point, it's in the team's best interest to move the player for some assets, to get some assets in return from another team. But being that the team is owned by the league, it created an interesting conflict of interest that seems to be putting the league in a precarious situation right now. The Los Angeles Lakers, one of the most storied franchises in the NBA, made a considerable offer along with some other teams. They pulled in the Houston Rockets, and they made a considerable offer to the New Orleans Hornets for Chris Paul, and it looked like we had a done deal. And within a couple of hours, the league stepped in and said no. The deal was orchestrated by the Hornets GM, Dale Demps, who was given carte blanche by the league to do what he needed to do as far as being able to operate as a normal franchise would operate if they were under independent ownership. So he did what any GM would do. He tried to do what was in the best interest of his team, what was in the best interest of the franchise. He made a deal. Some owners came back, complained, sent some angry emails to David Stern. In the exchanges between the other 29 owners and David Stern, the main sentiment was that the owners felt that the new CBA was supposed to prevent players from small market teams leaving to larger markets, which is how they viewed the situation in New Orleans with Chris Paul leaving the New Orleans Hornets and going to the Los Angeles Lakers. The bitching and moaning eventually seemed to sway Commissioner Stern and his in the league office to veto the Chris Paul trade, which is crazy. Never really happened before. Pretty unprecedented move by the league. So they vetoed it, which they were in every right to. They are technically the owner, and a normal owner has the right to do that. But at the same time, they are also the league. So it created a very interesting dynamic when you had that take place. So the trade was off. They tried to rework the trade, and the league upped the asking price to a ridiculous level, and that one fell apart. So now we're at an impasse where the Clippers have jumped into the trade talks with the Hornets. Again, the league's asking price is astronomically high, and the Clippers have backed out. Now it seems that the trade is back on, and they're still working through it. Again, this is a situation. And so we're going to walk you through the situation. We're going to give you our take on the situation. I'm going to throw it to my man PhD to kick us off and kind of just walk us through, PhD, because you sent the text. You notified me. You know, I coach varsity girls basketball. And so I'm watching our freshman team play, and I get a text from PhD. And, you know, I'm sitting there, my brothers are there with me, and we're watching, and we're talking basketball or whatever, and he sends me a text. And in this text, I'm looking, and I see all the details, just the basic, the main details, Odom to New Orleans, Gasol to Houston, and CP3 to the Lakers. And, you know, one of my brothers is a tremendous, tremendous LeBron and Heat fan, and you should saw a look on his face. Change his whole demeanor, you know. So walk me through. How did you feel? Because you're getting the news. You were able to get. I was in another space as far as thinking about the league and following us. But I wasn't near anything. I could follow the action as it was taking place. But you were able to kind of keep abreast of everything that was going on. So give me a little bit of a flashback. So you, as they say, and give me a recap of how you were feeling as things were going down.
You know, when I first heard the news, I got hit with a form tackle of optimism. I was excited because I said to myself, I really don't like him getting rid of Odom, but I think this makes them a better team. And this may provide some groundwork for Dwight Howard to make it out there as well. So I was really excited to see Chris Paul move because I knew the next logical big-time player movement was going to be around Dwight Howard. And unfortunately, we've seen this Paul deal stagnate, and it's had this ripple effect in terms of Howard hasn't moved yet. You know, now he's got to try to kiss and make up with Orlando or try to figure out something else there, and that's been real messy. You know, the other thing is the Lakers. The one thing we knew about the Lakers was, compared to other teams, they seem to have a nice system in terms of roles. Guys seem to be pretty comfortable. Like, we knew what they were bringing to the table. So now you look at the Lakers, they have a new coach, Phil's gone, okay? Now, you know, you had Odom there for a few days, and stuff was very uncomfortable there. He moves. And I really don't see what the Lakers got out of that deal. And now Gasol's there just kind of pissed off. So, you know, this whole CP3 thing, though, I think it was a bad move by Stern. He comes out smelling the opposite of roses. When I looked at this deal, to your original question, when I looked at this deal, it looked fair when you compare it to other deals that we've seen and the league over the last couple of years. It didn't seem off-kilter when you look at the draft picks, when you looked at the compensation. It looked online to me. Considering I thought the Hornets were going to get more than they would have after the season started or inevitably when they try to get rid of him before the trade deadline. So my initial thoughts were no red flags, even knowing and conscious that the NBA is running the Hornet. I honestly didn't see it being a big issue, and I still feel that way.
And I never thought it to be a big issue myself. I thought that it would play a part in the compensation package, because I think, you know, we talked about this last week. I thought the league was between a rock and a hard place, being that they own the team. And for them to be able to let him leave to L.A. After everything that kind of transpired over the offseason with the labor agreement and the dissension between the owners, big market owners and small market owners, I thought it was and just a general perception of the NBA as a league that is somehow rigged or fixed. You know, we talked about this earlier. You know, people today have been bringing up the Knicks getting the number one pick in 1985 and getting Ewing and the frozen envelope, and people still sore about that, and there's still conspiracy theories abound about that. The league definitely, I felt the league definitely, it's an image-conscious league, and David Stern is very conscious of how the league is perceived publicly. So I felt that that would be a hindrance, and I felt that teams seeking to acquire Chris Paul would have to really blow the league away with a tremendous offer. And I thought they had one in place. And now, D-Wills, what did you think of the offer that the Lakers sent to New Orleans, given what they were giving up? How did you think?
Well,
explain to me how you felt that helped each team involved. And the deal was, can you want to recap? Go ahead and recap the deal real quick.
You recap the deal because I think you got it, and then I'll give you my.
Okay, so the Hornets were getting Lamar Odom from the Lakers, Luis Scola, who is a above average power forward, kind of borderline all-star power forward, Kevin Martin, again, an above-average shooting guard, kind of borderline all-star shooting guard. Goran Dragic, who is, I think, a promising young player. I think he's a very good young player and could have pushed Jared Jack for a start for the starting spot in New Orleans. And a first-round pick which was from the Rockets, but which was owned by the Knicks. The Rockets got Pau Gasol, and the Lakers got Chris Paul. So that's how the deal went down. Now, D. Will, take us through each team and how you felt like it was, and how you felt about how this deal either helped or hurt each team.
Well, there's a couple of things here, and I'm in transit trying to pick up my daughter, so I want to make sure that I hear some background noise. But one of the things I think is important is that the point that y'all made, it was screwed up from the beginning. I think they set up a process, and Stern didn't honor the process. And we have an example of how this process should work from Major League Baseball with the Rangers, when they allowed the Rangers to make some moves late in the season when they were in contention for the playoffs. And Bud Selig allowed them to do that, and they gave the general managers the ability to do what they need to do. And so I think from you have three good, well-respected general managers making a deal. If you're talking about value of a franchise, they traded Chris Paul and basically got back what I would consider, you know, three solid starters and a up-and-coming young point guard. I mean, if you're coming in to buy the franchise and talking about what a first-round pick, they got a lot of value back, more value back than you're going to get at any other point. So I think from the New Orleans standpoint, they got a lot of value back, and they had the kind of thing that if I'm an investor that says, okay, we got a sound kind of move going forward. The Rockets, I mean, getting Pau Gasol and doing that, I mean, you basically were able to cut 10 years off your recovery from Yao Ming. Right away, you got a person who is a top seven, top eight player in the league, perennial all-star, big man, and you're back in the game already. And so it worked out there. And then the Lakers got what they needed. They needed a point guard who can make things happen, defend, and really set the backcourt. So I think if you look at it, it was a fair deal for what every team really needed. It was about as good a deal as you're going to get in the NBA. And I think that's why there's an outcry, because anybody with good eyes, good vision, knows that Every other deal that they've talked about since then is not even at the quality of this deal. Think about it. Even the Clippers deal, it's a good deal. Possibly, if you think about the value that everybody's getting, I mean, I think this initial deal was fair for all teams.
Okay, PhD, what were your impressions of the initial deal?
I liked it. I thought it was fair. You know, I think Devon hits on a very quality point in terms of what Houston was getting out of it. You know, giving up Scola, you know, gets you 15 to 20 each night, you know, with 7 or 8 boards. Giving up Martin, but getting Gasol back, I saw a win-win-win situation. And, again, I see the Lakers getting better. You know, a lot of people forget the Lakers have Andrew Bynum, who should be an all-star this year, okay? And again, Devon hit on the point that New Orleans got a lot of value back. And I think they got more value back in that initial deal than they're going to get in this potential Clipper deal that was initially proposed, and certainly more value than they're going to get before the trade deadline. And the other wild card here is, because it was the beginning of the season, Chris Paul, which I love, was utilizing his leverage, okay? He made it real clear, okay, trade me where you want to, but I'm not going to guarantee that I'm going to sign an extension once I get there. So that backs off most teams. So now he's being more selective, and he says, okay, send me to the Lakers, yeah, I'll sign a long-term deal. Send me to the Clippers, I'll sign a 1 to 2 year extension, which I love because it keeps the organization accountable, kind of like what LeBron was doing in Cleveland. It keeps the heat on the organization, especially one historically like the Clippers. Who,
so you want the safeguard.
Yeah, whether it's perceived or it's true, I would lean on the edge that it's true that they don't invest as much in their ball club in terms of talent. So, you know, now if this thing drags out to the season, Chris Paul loses that leverage from an individual standpoint, I think. But also organizations, they lose that ability to be able to kind of know ahead of time if he's going to sign an extension. You know, I think that's less likely to happen once the trade deadline comes along. So, again, I think it was a good deal, and I think it's just sad that these first two deals have not went through yet.
Yeah, I thought it was a good deal at first. Then I started to really look at it from a different angle. I still think the trade should have happened. They agreed on it. I don't like the idea that the league vetoed it. But I thought it was a good deal at first because I looked at the pieces. But then I thought about it. And let's say you're the Hornets, let's say the deal is completed. The Rockets make out great. They get Gasol. They get to compete. They'll be in the mix. They'll be kind of one of those teams, a 5-6 seed in the West, kind of right under the elites, but right there. They had some more young pieces in place with guys like Kyle Lowry, Chase Budinger, Courtney Lee, Patrick Patterson, who they feel like are ready to step up and play a larger role. So having a guy like Gasol, I think, with that young core, this year and the year after, they would have been right in the mix. Then maybe, you know, that third year, they take a bigger jump and kind of join the elites, or they make another move, which they had enough cap space to do. For the Lakers, I thought the move helped the Lakers, but also hurt the Lakers. It really thinned out their front court, which was one of their strengths, having Bynum, Gasol, and Odom, and being able to play them all together because of Odom's versatility. Losing that, I think, hurt the Lakers. Gaining CP3 was great because that was one less guy they had to worry about guarding, and an elite playmaker. Again, the triangle is gone. They needed somebody who can get Kobe shots. It allowed Kobe to kind of enter a different phase in his career where he no longer had to be in ISO situations. Now he can play off the ball and have somebody create for him. But then it made him real thin and power forward. But it also saves him a lot of money. You know, they would have gotten rid of $40 million in cap space with the move. So it was a good move for the Lakers.
the Hornets, though, while you look at the individual pieces and you say Scola, great player, solid player, good starter, could start for pretty much any team in the league. Okay, you look at Kevin Martin. Again, great player, could start for any team in the league, borderline all-star. You look at Odom, great player, probably could start for anybody in the league, reigning sixth man, great talent. But when you think about it, all that really makes them is like in the West, like a seventh seed. And they would still be, because of where those guys are in their careers, they would be a seventh seed for like the next 3 years, which means they're not going to get a sniff at the lottery. They're not going to get any high draft picks, which means that franchise is going to kind of just flounder in mediocrity, kind of like the Pacers have in the East, where they just kind of haven't been able to kind of turn that corner. They kind of have just been kind of mediocre. And the league trying to sell the team, it's hard to sell mediocre. You know, and so,
yeah, but,
go ahead.
I would agree with that, but anybody looking at this organization knows CP3 is not going to be part of your organization. So the other side of it is you get nothing for him. And you could say we might slip down into the lottery, but you may not. I mean, I think part of that deal, because you still got a first-round pick coming, right?
Yeah, but it's the Knicks' first-round pick.
Yeah, we don't know where the Knicks going to end up. I mean,
the Knicks not going to be in the lottery.
They're not going to be a lottery, but
not in the East.
But when you look at the potential, I mean, I wasn't as down on that because I think there's some pieces you could go around that. But if you're just going to lose CP3, I mean, maybe you take it, but that might not help you sell either. In New Orleans, because you're running the same picture again. You're going to get your next CP3. He's going to be here for 3 or 4 years, and you're going to lose him again with no other pieces. So I understand what you're saying with that, but I still think that's better than the alternative.
Yeah. So then the other piece is the Clippers trade. Now let's look at this Clippers trade. All right, so the Clippers have come with an offer of Chris Kaman and his $12 million expiring contract, Eric Gordon, who I think in 2 or 3 years will be, if not the best, the second or third best two guard in the league, depending upon how Father Time treats D-Wade and Kobe. Al-Farouq Aminu, who is a decent young player, a talented young player who can play the 3 or 4. And then Eric Bledsoe, who in my opinion was a steal of last year's draft. I thought that they got him in the late teens last year. A guy who, if he wasn't on the team with John Wall, I think would have been a top 10 pick. But he wasn't in a situation where he could truly showcase everything that he could do as a point guard. But I think he had top 10 to top 5 even talent. And on top of those players, throwing in an unprotected 2012 first-round pick of the freaking Minnesota Timberwolves. So this deal is loaded. And I started to scratch my head a little bit and say, if I'm the Clippers, I got to pull back. When I first saw the deal, I didn't see Eric Gordon's name in there. And I was like, if they can get Chris Paul and keep Eric Gordon, that is a big win for the Clippers and the organization. If they got to lose Eric Gordon, that's going to hurt. But to lose Eric Gordon and that number one pick of the Timberwolves, especially for this year's coming draft, which probably is going to be one of the more talent-laden drafts in quite some time, when you're thinking about a Harrison Barnes, an Anthony Davis, an Andre Drummond, an Austin Rivers, a Bradley Beal, those level of players, there are a lot of talented guys who are going to be coming out, who could potentially be coming out over the next year. That's a very, very valuable pick because I don't see the Timberwolves necessarily making a big leap this year. Plus, on top of that, the Clippers signed Caron Butler. They just picked up the waiver rights on Chauncey Billups. And we're going to talk about Chauncey in a little bit because Chauncey kind of threw a little hissy fit. I don't know if y'all saw the Twitter post that Chauncey threw out there, man. It's kind of crazy. Chauncey lost it a little bit. When he got amnestied, he didn't appreciate that. He's threatening people not to claim him and stuff, but we'll get into that later. So let's get into this Clippers deal. How do you guys feel about this? I throw it to PAC first. How do you feel about this Clipper deal?
I like it more than I like the Laker deal for Chris Paul. In terms of the ability to really build something and really have a setup of a team that was built to run that I think kind of fits CP3's style the best. Let me take a step back. Now, I'm a huge Chris Paul fan, okay? I look at Chris Paul as one of the few players in the league that consistently makes players around him better and gets the most out of their talent. Almost talking like a coach here. I put him and LeBron in the category of guys like Magic Johnson, guys like Steve Nash in his prime, where you look at what they did with so little, okay, and you're just amazed. Look at what LeBron did in Cleveland his last couple of years in terms of surrounded by mediocre talent and able to win 60 games. You look at what Chris has done, in given years and with the Hornets with marginal talent. I think he brings the best out of guys. He knows how to give them the ball in the right places. He has this excellent sense of the game. You know, we saw this when he was in college doing his thing with Wake Forest teams. So when you look at what he brings to the table, I couldn't help but think that some of this, like some of these intangibles he brings to the table would be a little bit cramped on a team that's ran by Kobe, you know, because a lot of it will be predicated on Kobe willing to let Chris Paul step in and do this stuff. And with the Clippers, I saw less of barriers there for Chris to come in and do his thing, unabated, and really get these young guys going. From a league standpoint, I think it's great to see the Clippers have one of the most exciting teams. And again, that's what would happen with a Blake Griffin, with, you know, the young guy Jordan had just re-signed, with Caron Butler, who for some reason we're not talking about the move quite yet, you know, in terms of just nationally. I think it's an excellent pickup. And then with Chris Paul, you know, like you mentioned, Marcus, the Clippers gave up a lot. I would have loved to see them keep either Bledsoe or especially Gordon or at worst, Kamen. But again, I was surprised that the Lakers deal wasn't approved. Now I'm really surprised that it's taken so long with this Clipper deal because, you know, Devon made a good point that New Orleans would be decent right now, but their future would be a little bit iffy. Well, with this Clippers deal, they're going to be decent now, and they've also got long-term assets as well. So, again, I like this deal even better.
Hey, D-Wills, how'd you feel about the deal, man?
I like the deal, but I'm trying to figure out why the Clippers would make it. And I love Chris Paul, but this is a person with a knee injury. You know, you got to think about that a little bit going forward. And you got to think about some of the young pieces that they – I mean, I thought the Clippers had a lot of upside. I thought they got a lot of pieces. I just think they needed another year to gel. And so I'm trying to think, why do you give up that? I mean, when you got that Minnesota pick, what does that do to allow you to add some major pieces – to your major piece to your team? So, I mean, from the Clippers standpoint, it's one of the few teams I might hesitate to make the deal because of the folks you're letting go. And like you said, I love Bledsoe. I loved him in college. He's got a competitive instinct and a swagger that's hard to coach. I mean, he's got that I get after it kind of attitude. That he plays like he's never scared. Y'all feel where I'm coming from with that?
And yeah.
That's the kind of cat you need. He got a lot of dog in him. So he's the kind of cat will be on the court with Kobe and just like, I'm going to take your ass. And in a way that make you feel like he know he can play, he's still learning how to play at the level. But there's something about giving up on somebody with that type of
swagger and want a will to win and get after kind of attitude that I would. And Gordon, I just think he's got so much explosiveness. So I think part of – I'm just questioning from the Clippers standpoint, you know, return. But when you just talk about let's set this thing up for the next 10, 15 years, I think they set up pretty nice. And so that's my only thing. But if the deal go through, I mean, for all the reasons y'all said, it can work out. But I'm just, if I'm the Clippers, I'm trying to figure out, is this the right deal? And that's
yeah.
I would ask.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I was actually happy when the Clippers kind of pulled back a little bit because I think the league is just, I think the league is just asking for whatever they feel like they can ask for. And I think the league is in a position where they have to ask for a lot because they vetoed the first deal, which, again, you know, I kind of presented a different side of it and a different perspective on the deal. But I still think for right now, that was a deal that allowed the Hornets to be a competitive team this year. Now, none of those names necessarily ring out. None of those names are necessarily going to fill seats in an arena. As far as Odom, Scola, and Martin. But as far as the product on the court, they could put it, you know, they still had Ariza in tow. They still have Emeka Okafor. They got Jared Jack. They still had some pieces in New Orleans where they could have put together a functional playoff caliber team with what they got from the Lakers and from the Laker deal.
I'm saying if you got a deal where you can get Gordon, Bledsoe, and Kamen.
And Aminu, I think, is a good player, too. I think Aminu's got a lot of talent. He's a good player. Plus, the plum is the pick. The plum is the pick because the pick,
right.
You got a guy who can be your the face of your franchise in Gordon. You have a backcourt mate with him in Bledsoe. And then you got a couple frontcourt guys in Aminu and Kamen, plus what you already got because they still have Ariza. They still have Jared Jack, who's a decent guard. And they still have Okafor. Then you have an opportunity to grab, again, a Harrison Barnes, a Perry Jones III, Anthony Davis, a true, because they're about, I think there are three, maybe four guys between Barnes, Perry Jones, Anthony Davis, and Andre Drummond who could be franchise caliber players in if they come out this year in this coming draft. Plus you have guys who are going to be solid pros, you know, and make multiple all-star appearances, and guys like Austin Rivers and Brad Beal and possibly a kid like Jeremy Lamb. So there's a lot of talent coming out in this draft class. That pick is the plum of the whole trade. Again, if the Clippers are giving up a ton. I mean, and honestly, if the Clippers kept all of that and just, you know, Chauncey seems like he's on board with coming there now, they have a nice team.
I mean, because Chauncey's a championship guard, meaning he knows how to win big games. You put them young cats around him.
Exactly.
He can do that and help you bridge to what your next point guard is going to be, and he's trying to make a run.
And you know, we laughed at Fealty last week for suggesting that the Clippers could be a sleeper. And, you know, we laughed at him, but quiet as kept, you know, we have to give him his props. And, you know, like I said, this is it. Like we always say, with all three guys who like being right. And, you know, the Clippers have proven Field to be somewhat of a prophet. Because he called it last week before they started making moves.
That's right.
You know? With the Caron brother, again, tough veteran. You know, they bring in Chauncey, tough veteran. They got Mo Williams in tow. Eh, you know, he did the whole crown over LeBron thing. I don't really know about Mo.
Yeah.
But he could be the sixth man. I think in a six-man role, Mo can be a solid player. They bring back DeAndre Jordan, a young big. Plus, they got Kamen, so they have depth in the front court. You know, they got Blake, who's a stud. They got Eric Gordon, who's a stud. So, I mean, and then they got Aminu and Bledsoe. And so they're like 8-9 deep.
Yeah, 8-9 deep, which is all you really need.
Without Chris Paul.
Without Chris Paul.
And honestly, if I'm them, I may just back out the whole deal altogether and say, you know what, we're going to let Chauncey hold it down until Bledsoe is ready. As Chauncey fades out, we're going to let Bledsoe step in and take it over. And we got, and, I mean, they got with it, and they keep the pick. So then that means that they then have a shot at one of these other franchise-changing guys, which, again, is actually ridiculous. So if I'm the Clippers, I sit on my hands. And I just say, you got to do what you need to do, because think about that. Think that they get, you know, a top-five pick, and they want to take a small four. They get an Anthony Davis, and they play him at the small four. And they let Caron Butler, you know, play out his contract while Davis gets ready, and then bam. Now you got Blake Griffin, Anthony Davis, Eric Gordon, Eric Bledsoe, and DeAndre Gordon as your starting lineup. Shit.
That's what I'm saying. And you do it at a time that Kobe is moving into the twilight of his career. So as you're going up, Kobe is moving to the twilight of his career. Now, you know the Lakers are going to make a move, but they can't make enough moves to catch up to that.
Yeah, it, honestly, depending on how the Clippers play this, man, they may become my favorite team. Because, man, they got a lot of – they looking like the Blazers looked before everybody on the team knees fell off.
And they started smoking weed.
Right.
You got to keep away from Snoop. But you, other than that, we make it happen.
Yeah.
Keep away from Snoop.
Yeah, you know, that's looking at the basketball side of it and the kind of logistics of it. Let's talk about how does this play out for David Stern, and how does this affect his legacy as a commissioner, which has been fairly solid to this point, where a lot of people argue that he has been the best commissioner in pro sports for the last 15 to 20 years. Where do you guys, D-Will, take that one. What do you think how do you think this impacts positively or negatively impact David Stern's legacy as a commissioner?
Well, I mean, y'all know I've been critical of him the last few months with the lockout and just some of the way in which he's been positioning himself and just the demeanor in which he's been coming at it. And then to have this. And the part that's puzzling to me, and obviously we're not in the back room and everything else, is that Stern has always been good about making the decision and making it. I think that's what made him effective. He made good decisions, but he makes them and he moves with it. And with this decision, he seemed like he had something, and then he allowed other people to come in and influence his decision in a way that he typically hasn't done historically. I think that's, you know, it's been clear he's in charge. And to allow these owners to have a voice, but don't, if you set up a system, explain to them, I set the system up, this is how we're doing it, and we're going to go with it. And it seems like he is going forward and backing up. And, you know, I think, you know, once the ball jumps on Christmas Day, a lot of this stuff we're going to forget. But I think Stern has got to recapture that in the public eye. And depending on how this thing plays out, you know, if New Orleans is damaged long term because of how this happened, I think that's going to affect his legacy, and that's going to continue the conspiracy theory. And, you know, are we trying to have contraction, and what are we trying to do? That's the thing. So he's got to hope that New Orleans comes out on the other side of this smelling good. I think that's going to be a very important thing. Even if they don't stay in New Orleans, whatever happens, they have to come out healthier, whatever happens with this, or I think there's going to be some problems long term.
So, I think Stern has, you know, he's always been come across as a stubborn cat. He's always come across as a guy who gets set in his ways, and he has a plan, and he's going to follow that plan. He's going to do what he's going to do. This situation seems no different. I do worry about this franchise. I hope they have a buyer lined up. Because if they don't have a buyer within the next 7 months, if somebody doesn't buy this team within the next 7 months and is allowed to move Chris Paul, because I think that's what they're hoping. What the league is hoping is that they're going to ask for some crazy shit until CP3 or until they get an owner. And then when they get an owner in place, they're going to let the owner then sell off CP3. And that way they can be clear of any blame, any conflict of interest, or anything like that. That's ultimately what they would like to do. They better hope that that happens, because otherwise CP3 walks, and this franchise is pretty much dead for the next 5 to 10 years, depending upon how they draft. They don't have any assets worth anything. Nobody's going to take Emeka Okafor. Nobody really is interested in Trevor Ariza as far as trading for him. They don't have any assets. They don't have any young players that, you know, are on the cusp of becoming stars. And they're in a town that's recovering. So that franchise could really go in a tank. And it's an issue the league should have really addressed a long time ago. PAZ, what do you think? How does this affect David Stern's legacy?
Well, you guys bring up some quality points. You know, one of the things Devon mentioned is we'll forget about this soon enough. You know, if the NBA has the type of season that we had last year where the finals was just so talked about, it was so intriguing, I think we'll forget about Stern. You know, Stern's like a good official. You know, they're doing their job when they go on notice. Now, what'll really screw up his legacy is if the Hornets stink it up for the next 5 or 6 years, and this thing goes down the drain, and they get no compensation back for Paul, or there's a significantly agreed upon less value that they get for him in February or March than they would have compared to what they were being offered now. The next thing that I could really screw up Stern's legacy is, you know, if Paul pursues this legal action in terms of collusion, being blackballed. I mean, that right there is something that could create a really nasty mess for the commissioner's office. And this option has been talked about a little bit in the national media. You know, they keep moving these deadlines. Well, over the weekend it was, well, if this isn't figured out by Monday, Chris is going to pursue legal action with the union. You know, okay, now they're talking about it's not done by this evening. This thing drags out, and now the courts get involved. Oh, my goodness. This is something that could really mess up Stern. But in general, I think they'll get it figured out. They'll have a good season of basketball. There'll be a lot of intriguing conversations, storylines, and David Stern will be sitting there at All-Star Weekend in the seat 15 rows up, just smiling, getting interviewed by Ahmad Rashad. Okay, and nobody will be thinking about this.
But, Marcus, so one thing I think, and you raised this as an issue, is you know, people like Gilbert and some of these people who are raising this and saying this is what we did. My understanding is that it's not going to go in place. Whatever they agreed around these issues aren't going in place for another 2 years. Right? Am I
correct?
Right or wrong?
Correct. Yes.
So what are they arguing about? It's not like we said it was supposed to go in and then it didn't happen. And it's not supposed to go in for another 2 years, which means, you know, and the way that some of these players are doing it is LeBron didn't take the most money he could have taken. So what
right.
do you do when somebody wants to take less money to be in a
But they just
situation?
Don't like where your team is.
Yeah, so you can't build rules around that. I mean, I think you will be able to do it, but ultimately you got to run better organizations for people to be there. I mean, Utah's done it for years. So
this is what it boils down to.
Yeah, so that's the part that is disturbing about this conversation is that you said Stern has been stubborn, but he wasn't stubborn this one. He set up a process. He agreed upon it with his GM, and then he wasn't stubborn enough to say and look at Gilbert and them and say, look, this is the process. Shut the hell up. This is what we're doing. This is what we agreed about. They have another way of doing it. The Major League Baseball figured out how to do it. I mean, Rangers were in contention. And they allowed them to make a key trade that would help them down the stretch. They made the decision. They allowed the GM to do what he needed to do, and then they roll with it. So you have precedents in another sport of how you do this. I mean, I don't know what the confusion is.
Well, see, the first thing I want to say is Dan Gilbert is an ass. Okay. I just wanted to put that in the airways, put that out in the universe real quick. And anytime something significant happens in the NBA, it should be somebody's job, whether it's the intern or janitor or, you know, the fry cook or whoever, it needs to be somebody's job to, like, pour orange juice on his keyboard, on his BlackBerry, drop it in the toilet, whatever. Just stop letting this man send emails because they're just ignorant. It's just full of ignorance, all right? Mm-hmm. That's one thing. But I agree. These owners that are complaining, these small market owners, you know what? Get off your hands and make a freaking deal. Like, if you don't like what the Lakers did, you don't like that the Lakers acquired Chris Paul, were you throwing deals at people? Did you send a blockbuster deal to the Hornets and they said, nah, we don't want your deal, we're going to send them to the Lakers? If that didn't happen and nobody else was in the bidding, then shut the hell up. Otherwise, make a deal. Do your job. Go. Don't send an email to David Stern. Send an email to your punk-ass GM and ask him why he wasn't involved in the talks. Why didn't he get involved in the talks? Otherwise, everybody was just hating. They really were. They were just hating at the fact that the Lakers got better, that the Hornets moved it, and they took it as an opportunity to complain about it. And I think what we got to see, it's something that we don't rarely get to see, is the reaction of owners anytime these trades happen. But usually it's between two owners, and one of the teams is not owned by the league, so they don't have anybody to complain to. They just complain amongst themselves, and they send these emails to each other, like, did you see that stupid-ass move that the Grizzlies made, sending Pau Gasol to the Los Angeles Lakers for, you know, a bag of magic beans and Marc Gasol, you know. So I'm sure that they have this kind of banter back and forth anyway. But I think now that the team is owned by the league, they had a little bit more impetus to go ahead and complain even louder. We got Ray joining us. Ray, you there?
I'm out here.
So what do you think of this whole Chris Paul situation?
Well, I think that the fact that the Hornets are owned by the league is an issue for me, and it's a testament to the fact that the NBA doesn't need to be as large as it is. I mean, if you can't find somebody to buy the team, then disband it, you know, break it apart and sell it off. You know, I find it to be a huge conflict of interest, you know, to have a management team in place and then veto everything that they try to do. You've taken the GM right out of the mix, and it's just, you know, to me, it's ridiculous. This thing. You know, this started last year with the decision. This type of behavior was afforded. You know, if they were going to do something, they should have tried to do something last year and stop it. But when they didn't, they opened the floodgates for these young players, you know, to ask for trades and to make these moves. The biggest difference this year is that, you know, guys like Howard and guys like Paul are still under contract for a year and have to play. But, you know, you could see a situation where, like you say, where Paul just waits it out. And after a year, he walks away from the Hornets, and the Hornets don't do a thing. And then they're a terrible basketball team, and the league doesn't get the value out of them that they could have.
Which is what I think will ultimately happen. I think
But if I'm Chris Paul,
they have to find somebody to take him off their hands.
You know, if I'm Chris Paul, I've already got a lawyer because this is just a huge conflict of interest. You know, where the other teams are saying, you know, because this team is owned by the league, therefore I am part owner. I don't want this to happen. You know, you got owners like Hubain poo-pooing this trade, but accepting a Lamar Odom trade. You know, and it's like. It just reeks.
It's a jacked up deal all the way around. And that's the crazy part about it is that, again, right? to me, it's like if this deal had gone from if Chris Paul had gone from New Orleans to say Milwaukee, would people have had a problem?
Right.
Probably not. It was because he went to L.A. and not any L.A. team, but the Lakers. And so, to me, the league still can't trade him because how are you going to justify, again, unless somebody comes with an astronomically lopsided deal, how are you going to justify saying that one deal is necessarily better than the first deal, which to me ultimately means he ain't going nowhere. He's going to stay put until they find until they find somebody to buy the team, and then that owner can trade him.
See, and the other thing, I'm sitting back and just laughing because it reminds me of a bad fantasy football, trade. You know, when you got guys just, without justification, other than, they don't want to compete with it, they just say, oh, no, you can't do that. Well, it's within the bylaws. It's within the rules, In a couple of years, maybe this trade couldn't take place. But today it can, and it should have. And it was, And I think what they saw was the writing on the wall. When the Lakers agreed to give up Gasol and Odom, they're telling you right away, we're trying to get Paul and Howard. We want them both. We're going to end up with them both. You wait and see. And when the Paul trade didn't go down, and of course, in the Howard trade, it still might be out there, but it's just funny the way that grown men, with supposedly scruples, these ain't Christians. How's that? I just put it out there like these ain't Christians. it's just funny.
And it is, and I think this story is going to keep developing and keep evolving. I'm going to let that marinate for the listeners for a little bit, and we're going to get into we're going to continue unveiling our each of our top 50 lists as we go through here. So we're looking at – I'm going to kick it off today, starting off with my 30 through 21 of my top 50.
Marcus.
Yes.
Listeners to try to go through the list slow so they can keep up.
Sweet. Beautiful. Will do. All right. So, number 30, Iceman, George Gervin, scoring machine for the San Antonio Spurs. The brother liked to fang a roll. All right. Number 29, Hondo Havlicek. Now, I will hide behind my age on this one. I've seen, the hardwood classics of Hondo, but I don't really have a context. I didn't really have a context and a legitimate knowledge base to go from when trying to place Hondo. I know he was great, but when it came down to splitting hairs as to who was greater, I really didn't have enough on Hondo to have him higher in my list. 28, KG, Kevin Garnett. Revolutionary big man, in my opinion. Restarted the whole high school to the NBA movement. Really played his position at his size in a way that nobody has as far as his ability to pass, rebound, defend, and score. KG was, a different kind of ball player and a prototype for a lot of young big men. When you look at guys like Lamar Odom and Anthony Davis, all the guys in between, whether it be Rashard Lewis, all those 6'10 guys who now are playing on the perimeter, part of the reason they're doing that is because of the impact that KG had on the younger generation of ball players. Bob Pettit, again, another one I didn't see a whole lot. I'm going off of what everybody else says. Elvin Hayes, Bob Pettit at 27. Elvin Hayes at 26. Young Kevin McHale at 25. McHale, again, This dude has a plethora of post moves, great post player, excellent power forward, part of many championships. Rick Barry at 24. At 23, Karl Malone. At 22, John Stockton. Now, you may ask, why would you put John Stockton above Karl Malone? I don't like Karl Malone. We're going to leave it at that. As an 11-year-old, I stopped liking Karl Malone when he was hating on Magic playing in the All-Star game. Even as an 11-year-old, I knew what he was saying about catching A's for Magic was ignorant. And at that moment, Karl Malone became one of the players that I just don't like. So that's why Stockton is ahead of Malone. At 21, Charles Barkley. So we're stopping at 21. So at 21, Charles Barkley. So that's my list. Release the hounds.
Y'all silent.
Well, I don't have much to say because there's five guys in his list that are just one off from my list. The guy you have a little bit higher than I do is George Gervin at 30. I really can't argue with that pick. You know, I had Gervin at 33. Rick Barry is one that I didn't get to see him play enough. You know, perhaps, you know, you guys can fill us in more with that. But I also had Rick Barry about the same place, but it was one I just kind of took everybody's word for it.
I mean, Rick Barry was one of the prolific players and scorers. The two that I thought was pretty interesting was Karl Malone, as you talked about, White Karl, and then Barkley not being in the top 20. So those are two that I could see why you didn't do it, but particularly Barkley, that was one I want to hear a little bit more explanation about.
Yeah, and I can definitely explain that. Love Chuck's game, love Chuck's intensity. For what Chuck did at his size, he was definitely a different kind of. You know, every generation has a couple of guys who do amazing things. Who have a unique skill set for their size, you know, an AI, a Garnett, a Dirk, Chuck, you know, those guys had an interesting skill set for their size, Magic, Bird. Chuck is one of those guys. But also, Chuck fell at 20 for me because of he didn't have no rings. And that was a big thing because if Chuck had one ring, he'd have been top 15. But the guys I had ahead of him, I'm going through my list right now, and I think they all have rings. I don't think there's a guy ahead of Chuck on my list who doesn't have a ring. Well, there's one, and we know who that is. The Lord of No Rings. So that is the only player on my list ahead of Charles Barkley who doesn't have a ring. So that's why Charles was where he was, because he ain't got no ring.
Where I differed a little bit is because one of the things I want to be critical, and this is probably where, you know, it'd be interesting for us to have a conversation at a later date, is I did want to do what Jay Billis what Jay always talks about, having us do a good job of counting. Because I think to judge Charles' greatness just about winning championships, he was one of the few players that I didn't hold that against him in a way in terms of his impact on the game. So that I think
– Right, but this is my top 20, and I'm splitting hairs because all of these guys are great. And I'm splitting hairs, and I got to decide on something. And that's what it was.
What about a short length?
Except for that. What'd you say?
What about the length of shorts?
What about the length of shorts? I should have decided by the length of shorts. Is that what you're saying?
No, never mind.
But
Over the,
so that,
over
that,
the
was, that was really what it was for me. Because again, all of the guys in my top 20, again, I think skill wise, Barkley's right on par with those dudes. I think skill wise, like I said, he could easily have been in my top 15, top 10 maybe. But again, everybody I got ahead of him except for one has got some rings.
And I'll be interested where that one is at.
Yeah.
You know, I'll be interested.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll get some grief for where he's at.
I
can't wait
weekend,
to have that conversation.
Know,
so.
Over the weekend, I looked at some.
That's what I'm talking about.
50. Yeah. Over the weekend, I had.
Oh, that's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about LeBron.
I know that, and it'd be interesting to see where you got him, because he is. If you look at the first part of his career, there's a lot of debate over that in terms of his impact. So you could be some good debate. So we'll look forward to that conversation.
Oh yeah, that's one for next week. We'll save that for next week. We'll get there. We will definitely get there.
I would think for Karl Malone and Barkley, a lot of lists are much higher than that. So I think that's where you are a little bit different, and I mean your rationale for it is I couldn't argue against. It's Barkley particularly in terms of where you put him, place him on any team, any squad, in terms of anyone you put in the top 20, is just his dominating. When you think about the number where he's in terms of rebounds, scoring, you know, all the different things that he was able to do and carry teams on his back, that and defend much bigger players. That's one that is a good debatable thing.
One thing that has always impressed me about Barkley, and I heard this in the barbershop, okay, about 10 years ago. They said, think about any young superstar right now. Okay, could you put them on one of the most dominant teams that just won a championship a year or two ago, and they're the man? And in most cases, you know, there's very few exceptions that folks could do that, like a Tim Duncan, okay? And then they weren't a championship team a few years before he came. You look at Barkley. Barkley went on that team that had, you know, an aging Irving. I think he played one year with Moses Malone, Maurice Cheeks, and by the middle of that first year, he was a man. And, you know, the next 5 or 6 years after that, I mean, he just ascended to be one of the top players of the game. That's something that tells me that this dude was just a gamer. I mean, from day one, he was just a star.
Yeah, I'm not trying. My placement of Charles doesn't knock any of his accomplishments, anything that he did or his impact. But again, when you look at, I feel like my top 20 is airtight. I feel like my top 20 is airtight, and Barkley had to go. Somebody had to come outside of his top 20. When I got to like 22, 23, at that moment it was like, well, somebody, three of y'all not going to make it. So the three that didn't make it was Barkley, Stockton, and Malone. And Malone wasn't going to make it no matter what. If I could legitimately find a legitimate reason to put that man lower, I would have. I hate his truck driving ass.
Over the weekend, my mom told me not to say hey.
I strongly dislike Karl Malone.
Over the weekend, I had a chance to look at some top 50s and some of the ways that people came about it. And that's one of the reasons I didn't sit down and do one, because of my viewpoint would have been jilted, you know. But Fanball.com had a top 50 based on on simply recognition and gave points according to how many all defensive teams, defensive player of the year, MVPs, whether or not, and this was one that I didn't necessarily agree with, whether or not the player had their jersey retired. You know, just those types of awards, that type of recognition from the sports
writers. What place was it?
You know,
where was this?
I think it was Fanball, fanball.com. And it was a real unique way to rate, you know, the top 50 players. And I thought, you know, when we were talking last week about where Dennis Rodman might fall or you know, just based on some of the things that he did or didn't do on the court, you know, you realize, you know, that you know, there is two sides of the court and how these players are being ranked, you know, based on rings or, you know, based on, you know, their ability to win championships or whether or not you like them or whatever. You know, the credentials that some of these players in the top 50 had, you know, it was a pretty unique way that they had done it. And, you know, I was you know, looking over that list, and it was a pretty neat way that it was done. But it made me step back and say, okay, I can't make a top 50 now because I agree with a lot of what they've done. And that also didn't allow, you know, for a lot of players that are playing today to even be on that list yet. You know, I told you last year, you know, if LeBron James doesn't win a championship, he's George Gervin. That's all he is. You know, fun to watch, good to look at, without a championship, you know, you ain't even going to remember him for a finger roll, you know? And so just, you know, you really have to have, you know, you really have to have some rings, you know? That's why you know, if Dennis Rodman would have just gotten rebounds, you say, oh, he was a great rebounder. But Dennis Rodman won championships. Now you got to talk about Dennis a whole different way. You got to look at him in a whole different light. And so, you know, when you look at guys like Stockton, you know, you could arguably say Stockton could have moved up or back in that list depending on how you look at him. As a defender, he probably wasn't that great. But as a passer and what he, you know, what he accomplished with assists, you know, if you look up the assist records, he's like 2,000 or 3,000 assists more than the next player. You know, and granted, you know, they had that little two-man combination in Utah, and really that's all that they had. But the fact that, you know, night in and night out, you knew what he was going to do. You know, had John Stockton won a championship or two, you'd have looked at him in a whole different light.
Absolutely.
But it just, go ahead.
And I would say, I mean, when you look at Charles, and this is one, because I've done a little bit, we've had to go back and look at these numbers, but he's one of four people to score 20,000 points, 10,000 rebounds, and 4,000 assists.
Sure.
I mean, when you
sure.
think about just impact in the game and what he brought, I mean, it's the kind of stuff that are legendary type of statistics. And
right.
And so I think that's my challenge. I understand what Game Changer is saying about the rings, and that could be a part of the evaluation. I mean, that's why it's your list and our list and everything else. But I think I have one or two people like that that you need to not allow the ring conversation to cloud you in terms of greatness. In terms of any era, he would have dominated the same way he dominated in the 80s. He dominated like that right now.
Yeah.
So,
but did you guys get a chance? I sent the text out a little bit ago. Did you guys get a chance to watch the show on NBA TV, Open Court? Anybody check that out?
No, I didn't get a chance to see that.
No, I haven't. No.
It's a great show. It's got like Shaq, C-Web, Kenny, EJ's kind of facilitating. Steve Curry's there. Chuck is there. And they just kind of having like a roundtable conversation. Reggie was there. They just kind of have, like, a roundtable conversation. They showing clips of old playoff games, and then the fellas talk about what was going on in the game. It was super interesting. It was really like just sitting down talking to them cats about stuff that happened when they was on the court. And then just telling stories about different guys and different situations and what was going on as it happened. They kind of telling stories about who was saying what in the huddle and funny things that happened during the game. But one thing that Charles said during the show, he talked about being the guy, and he talked about the responsibility of being a guy. He talked about how, you know, it's different, and you get the credit, but you also get the blame. Because he brought up the point that nobody ever says, Dan Marley don't have no rings. You know what I mean? Nobody cares that Dan Marley doesn't have any rings. But when you're the guy, and when every night in and night out, he said night in and night out, you knew that if it was a close game, the coach was calling a play for you. And you knew that you had to step up and make shots, and you had to step up and make plays. And so fair or unfair, I think Charles understands that responsibility and that baggage and being a dominant player, and to prove your dominance, that comes with it. That comes with it is being able to win it all and win championships. It comes with it.
But there's a lot of cats who win. I mean, I'm saying there's winning championships, but it's also in the context in which you win championships. And so there's a lot of people on our list who won multiple championships, but they also had a different kind of configuration of their team to win those championships.
Right, so, and none of those guys are in my top 20.
Yeah, so we'll talk about, because I think that's part of the argument. And that's why I say,
except one.
When Jay Billis, I thought was a really good thing, he said, we do a good job of counting when we try to talk about greatness. I thought was a really good point to a certain extent, and I think Charles is one of those people who fit that bill, that don't allow championships counting to tell us about where he is in terms of his greatness historically in the NBA. And I think, so that's the only argument I'm making about Charles. I would make the argument about everyone.
But see, and I get that Billis comment, but when I hear that Jay Billis comment, you know what that makes me think of? That makes me think of Terrell Davis, Bo Jackson, Yao Ming, guys whose careers were cut short, but they were great players. To me, that's who that comment applies to. Grant Hill. Grant Hill was great.
And
does he have the numbers? Nope.
And that's a whole nother top 10 later. You know, because
right.
You
know what I mean? Bill Walton was
great.
Does he have the
numbers?
Nah. And so to me, that's who that. When you're talking about guys who are able to fulfill their careers, guys who had complete whole careers, were fairly injury-free, where injury didn't really impact their ability to play, it is about counting. Because at that point, everybody's great. Everybody has skills. Everybody was an impactful player during their era.
Yeah, but not very many people scored 20,000 points, 10,000 rebounds, and 4 assists.
And I bet I got the other 3 people ranked ahead of him.
That's what I'm saying. But I'm saying that when you start to put together the combination of numbers, even in our top 10, there's very few people who got profiles like that.
You could say Charles's greatness is much like AI's then. For the teams that he played on and the role that he had to play, he had to put up those kind of crazy numbers. AI had to do that.
Yeah, but Charles still made people around him better. He still made the defensive concept on his team better. I mean, that's where I get with Marcus's argument about AI. That's why AI is not higher on my list than he was. Charles dominated. He did his thing, but he also his teammates were better. He made them better. Defensively, their team was better. He had an impact on his team's ability to get. I mean, Charles is one of the best people passing out of the post in terms of creating shots. That's why he got 4,000 assists. You know what I'm saying? So that part,
sure.
I don't put him in the same element as AI on that.
Yeah, I can't. You know, I'm not trying to knock Charles' greatness. I had to use some sort of deciding factor, and it came down to rings.
I understand.
Yeah. I mean, again, like I said, Charles could be in my top 15 easily. Easily be in my top 15. If it was just on skills alone, he would be in my top 15 and higher. You know what I mean? He'd easily be in my top 15. But it's not just that. It's not just that.
Well, I want to see the rest of your list.
Yeah. So we're going to keep it rolling. We're going to get into the next segment. We're going to get into the 5 on the black-hand side. We're going to talk a little NBA free agency. So let's go ahead and jump into that.
Five on the black hand side.
All right, we're going to talk NBA free agency and trades. So first in the five on the black hand side, somebody, anybody, give me your best signing thus far. Give me a good deal. Your best signing thus far and why.
I'm going to go to one?
Yeah, I'm going to give you one. Because I'm sure somebody else has got some other ones. I'm going to give you one. Just give me your best.
All right. Phil, I'll let you go.
I'm sorry, man. I'm limited. I'm putting you in a box. I'm restraining you.
You're killing me, man.
I'm Dean Smithing you right now. I got you in the Dean Smith mode.
I took all these notes. Okay, let me go. Let me. Damn, you're killing me. Okay. I reserve the right to come back.
All right.
Can I do that?
Yeah.
I mean, Devon threw it to me in the post, but demanded it right back.
Right. No. Get that back, sir. I got him.
Go ahead, Phil. I'm going right back to you in the post to let you do your thing. I'm getting out of the way. I'm clearing to the weak side. I'm spotting up.
My top one's David West going to the Pacers. He was signed by the Pacers a couple of days ago, along with George Hill, with Granger. I think they have a good nucleus there to do some things. They got better from a team that made the playoffs last year and actually gave the Bulls some headaches. So I actually think that in the East, the Pacers will be the surprise team, perhaps moving up to the five or six seed. In the East.
Okay. All right. Have you been following the signings at all? You got anyone you want to throw out there?
Well, again, one is hard because I found two signings that were just crazy. But I thought Odom going to Cobain and his boys was just crazy on the Lakers' part. I don't know what they know about what's going to roll out that would allow them to get rid of the NBA sixth man. You know, for what they got for him was kind of ridiculous. So,
yeah.
You know, somewhere the Lakers know something. You know, it's like they got David Stern on speed dial and they've got something else in the mix, but for the Mavs to be world champions and then to get a player like Odom, I thought that was kind of crazy.
Yeah, I agree. I thought to get him and not really have to give anything up, thought it was kind of crazy.
Wait,
D. Wills, jump in here. What you got?
I'm going to go with this one because I like who you called the David West one, so I don't have to talk about that one. I say Battier to Miami is what that team needed, and I think he was a great signing because he's stability. And he can do a lot. I think he's great in the locker room. I think he can spot up. He can defend multiple positions. He gives him a level of toughness. And he's that veteran that I said you need to have that is not going to be afraid to talk to people in a way that I think sometimes you need that kind of the veteran to do. So I'll go with that one. And I got another one that hopefully I can come back to.
All right. The one I was going to throw in there is Chauncey Billups going to the Clippers. They signed him. They bid for him, getting him for $2 million, which is a great deal for what I think he's going to bring to the table. He's a proven winner. He's a vet. He's a professional. He's a leader, despite all the things he said on Twitter. He kind of lost his mind on Twitter, but, he was threatening teams. You know, don't sign me. I'll show you leadership. he was just saying a bunch of crazy stuff, man. Chauncey kind of lost it a little bit on Twitter. Twitter can be a good thing. It can be a bad thing. But I love that signing for the Clippers because it gives them the ability to say we're good in the whole CP3 thing. In the Chris Paul negotiation, it gives them a different kind of leverage to be able to say, look, this is going to work with or without Chris Paul. We'll take them, but we ain't going to give you every damn thing we got. And if I'm them, I actually back out, and I roll with Chauncey, and I go into the season with Chauncey, Mo Williams, and Eric Bledsoe in my backcourt as my point guards, And that three, you have a guy who can play now, a guy who can play two spots, and Mo Williams.
Yeah.
And allow Chauncey to play two spots. Both of them can play two spots. And then you got a youngster who can push the pace when you need to. I take that plus keeping my young stud and Eric Gordon again, who's in the next 2-3 years going to be one of the top three shooting guards in the league. You got Caron Butler, who's another tough veteran. You got Blake Griffin, who in a year or two is going to be one of the top two or three power forwards, if he's not already in that conversation. And then you got some bigs in Chris Kaman and DeAndre Jordan, both 7 foot, both got 6 fouls every night, both can lay wood on people. It's all good. I mean, that's the squad. And you got Aminu, who can come in and give a different – can play four or three. If I'm the Clippers, I sit pat, man. I just roll with what I got. I love CP3, but he ain't worth the farm.
Yeah. Right.
So D-Wills, I'm gonna unleash the beast.
And I'm going to do real quick. It's a combination of things that I like, and I want to see how this is going to go. The big baby trade bringing Bass to Boston, but it's a combination of getting Bass and then picking up Wilcox, right? Because Boston picked up Wilcox.
Yep.
That's going to change that front lineup in a way that Wilcox can be a beast some nights. And you could, in terms of getting that rotation they used to have, in terms of those bigs, getting some people with some energy, I like that move. So that's one. That's a move that I think is, you know, Boston doesn't. You're not going to make a splashy move, but I think that's a move that's going to pay dividends for them this year. I think Bass gives them some flexibility, and then I think getting Wilcox in there with that rotation is going to be nice. I'll just leave
okay.
That one.
Okay, I like that move as well. I dig that move as well. All right, we're going to move on to number two. We're looking at bad deal. Give me the worst signing that you've heard out there thus far.
Eddie Curry. So I...
My man didn't hesitate. Man, I wish I could have clocked that, man.
What's he got left? I gave the Heat one. I got to take one away. Now they just even. Eddie Curry, I don't...
No. Yeah, you didn't like that? How much did they pay him?
Probably a bag of chips and some beans, but still... I don't know. It don't feel right.
Yeah, that's my major thing. I think Eddie Curry, if you're paying him vet minimum, you take that. That's a win. You know, I think that could be an upside sign. If he's at vet minimum, you can get rid of him and it's not a big deal. But if you're paying anything more than the vet minimum for Eddie Curry on a team with a fitness qualification. You know the Heat, they have those fitness requirements that guys have to make or else they can't play. You just wasted a bunch of money if you paid them anything other than the minimum. I'm sorry.
And it just seems like they tread water with a pickup like that, right? You know, there's some other vets that were out there that I would take over, maybe over Eddie Curry. And, you know, it depends on how the contract works, but there's some other vets I felt like were available that you could go with in not Eddie Curry. But it just seemed like a bad deal. So I said a bad deal. I don't know what everyone else said, but that's my bad deal.
Yeah. B. Wills, bad deal. PhD, bad deal. Not bad.
I'm going to go with Kwame Brown to the Warriors, and they actually paid him a bit more than the minimum. So,
yeah, cake stealing Kwame. You remember when he stole that cake? What are you, 7? Who's stealing cake?
I mean, I'll tell you what, man. I was talking to my brother the other day. If you want your kids to be successful, make them a switch-hitting outfielder, or if they got some size to them, put them in basketball, because it's just supply and demand. I mean, this guy's a bum, but he's 7 foot, relatively athletic for a 7-footer, and, I mean, these guys just get numerous opportunities because they don't grow on trees, they don't grow at colleges. I mean, it's just tough to find quality bigs in this league.
Yeah, I see that as I look at Nene just signed for 5 years, $67 million. I'm going to go, that's my bad deal. Nene 28.
No.
Come on. Tell us where. Tell us where he signed.
Denver. He's staying home.
Probably because they got all these people locked up in Shanghai right now. Can't get off.
Me and Phil were talking about that earlier, man.
You know, the one guy in the NBA that's playing in China, and Marcus already knows his answer, who's the one guy in the NBA that's playing in China that has an out clause that can come back to the NBA anytime he wants?
Is it Martin?
Oh, wait. No. The only guy is Yee.
That is right.
It looks like 12 guys over there playing right now. They stuck.
All of them stupid.
Except for me, the Chinese cat.
But I still think the worst signing though this week. The worst signing I think this week though was up in Detroit, where they just simply bought Hamilton out.
Yeah.
They spent $11 million to free up $4 million worth of cap space this year and next year. And I just, you know, when teams have that kind of money, when this sport has gotten to that level, you know, they shouldn't cry about anything about new stadiums or venues. When you just go simply just pay a dude not to play. Here's $11 million. You know, you go do what you want to do. Those kind of signings,
yeah.
they just hurt me. They just hurt me bad.
And another one that to me was not a bad signing for the team, but just a bad signing for the player. And that was Tayshaun Prince. You know, everybody is gone from the glory days in the D. Hey, he's the last one left. I just don't understand. He had a chance to get free. You know what I mean?
I understand that.
It's like a slave, man. Master letting everybody go. And like, nah, I kind of like it on the plantation. I think I'm going to hang around for a little bit. And what else am I going to do? I'm only good at picking cotton. I'm just going to hang out here. You know? Get out.
You're probably hanging out with at Slaughterhouse with Royce the 5'9". Something going on.
Phil, he said his wife must be heavily involved in the community. That must have been a wife decision.
Yeah, you know.
That wasn't a player decision.
He's trying to turn things around. Dave Bing made that pitch. Mayor Bing said, we need you, son.
Oh, man. Man, so number three, give me a guy whose value has been inflated because of the lockout. So because of the short period of time in which teams have to operate, a guy whose value has gone way up because of how everything has transpired. I'll throw this one to PhD first.
I'll go with Jamal Crawford.
Hell yes.
As of tonight, he still hasn't been picked up, but he's probably shot up to the top of the list or very near of the eligible or the top free agents still out there. And, you know, if teams had all summer, I just don't think that he would be on top of that list under any circumstances. But considering teams are going to need guys that can just fill it up due to the shortened training camp, shortened preseason games, they need guys they can just throw it to and make stuff happen, his value is going to be very high.
I got to go with Kwame Brown. I'm reading this article, man. The Warriors signed this fool for $7
million. Yeah.
Are you kidding me? And his damn agent had the nerve to say it's too good to pass up. Hell yeah, it is. You freaking Kwame Brown. Kwame is extremely grateful. Hell yeah, he is. I guarantee you did not anticipate getting $7 million from anybody.
So what do you say about Mark Jackson and company? What are they doing?
Yeah,
I think that
doing?
Might be the winner. That might be the winner.
Yeah, man.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh man. Who you got, D Wills?
When I saw your question about who just benefit from lockout, I was going to make a frame of any veteran. So like the Tracy McGrady's of the world, Juwan Howard, any veteran, because it's a short track and you need people who just, you need pros. You need people who can turn around real quick for the same reason. So I was framing it in any veteran, and that's why you see the Kwame Browns. You think anybody that they can get in who can get up and going quickly on things. So that was kind of my framework. But I think for me, Kwame takes the cake. But my whole thing was like, when I'm looking at these veteran signings,
Kwame takes the cake. I see you.
they I can't even beat that one.
Yeah, I can't really mess with Kwame, man. I can't really. Ray, you got one?
I don't have one. You know, I look at that West Coast all and just shake my head.
Another one that's out there is Caron Butler. I think having that extra time to heal allowed him to get $8 million a year from the Clips, which isn't bad. You know, he's 31, but you know. Again, I think that extra time off to heal also helped him. I think if the season had started on time a month ago, you know, I don't know how his knees would have checked out a month ago, you know, having to go through a training camp and all that kind of stuff. So I think that helped him. Let's move on to number four. Dwight Howard, staying or going?
He's going.
Going?
He's going. Yeah, he's going.
Where's he going?
I think he's going to try to make that deal. And I haven't kept up with the story, but I think New Jersey is a good deal if they can get that stuff to work out at some point. I don't know if it's dead or not. Y'all might have more updated information. I think that's a good deal for him. I just think he's going because I think he's putting that pressure on, and I think he just needs to be on one of the coasts. So he's going to go to New York, or he's going to try and find a way to get to L.A., to Lakers.
Ray, he's staying or he's going?
I think he's going, and I think he's going to L.A. I think Gasol is gone. I think that, again, you know, when you get rid of a player like Odom for a bag of chips, you know something. You know, something is definitely in the mix. You know, something is definitely happening. So I think that he's going.
PhD, staying or going?
Going. I agree with Ray and everything he said.
Okay. All right, and we're going to push into numbers. What's that?
It's that Chris ball movement.
Oh, yeah. You know, swing it. Just swing it. I'm the swing man. So what has to happen to get the CP3 debacle out of the headlines? So what needs to happen these first couple of weeks so that we stop and we finally forget about this whole CP3 situation? PhD.
I don't know, pass. I'm just so, I mean, my hands are up in the air, so I'll just pass.
D. Wills.
They're going to have to trade him, and he's going to be happy with the trade.
Yep.
Ray.
Well, I think Khloe Kardashian got to become pregnant, and then something got to come out the closet. You know, you got to have something out of basketball to get rid of this mess. You know, something outside of basketball, because this is just, you know, it just leaves a bad taste in everybody's mouth. You know, you either are for it or you're against it. There's no middle ground waiting to see what happens. This is where you start to lose your fan base, you know, and you have a lot of confidence in what's going on with the league.
Yeah, I was thinking about this, and me and Phil T were talking earlier, and it kind of gave me where I want to go with it as I was thinking about it. Phil was talking about the Odom trade and Odom being in Dallas, and how, you know, we were talking about how Dallas is going to have a hard time. They have to figure out how to replace what Tyson Chandler brought, which is somebody who could rebound and protect the rim. And he mentioned Chris Humphries. And I think that's what would need to happen is Chris Humphries would need to get signed by the Dallas Mavericks so we can have Khloe and Lamar on the same team with Chris Humphries, who's constantly seems to be in the news bashing the Kardashians. So I think something of that nature would have to happen for Chris Paul to, this whole Chris Paul debacle to kind of move beyond the headlines. So that's the five on the black hand side today. Now, D Wills, are you ready? You got your 30 through 21 ready?
Crickets.
All right, we're gonna go with PhDs.
At least he ain't PhD,
let's get it. Hey, before you get started.
I want winners.
Let's go.
Number 30, Nate Thurman.
Oh.
Yes. 29, Allen Iverson. 28, Scotty, I call him Scott Pippen. 27, John Stockton, winner. 26, Kevin McHale. 25, Elvin Hayes. Marcus and I have them at 25, 26, respectively, swapped. 24, Kevin Garnett. 23, Rick Barry. 22, Vinny Johnson. Just kidding.
I was about to say something. I'm a Detroit fan.
22, Isaiah Thomas. 21, Elgin Baylor. So again, 30, Nate Thurman. 29, AI. 28, Pippen. 27, Stockton. 26, Nikhil. 25, the Big E. 24, KG. 23, Rick. Yep, that's it, Rick. 22, Zeke. 21, Elgin Baylor. I'm open for business.
All right. I mean, that's pretty similar to my list. I don't have AI that high, but we've discussed AI. We've discussed that ad nauseum at this point. We all know how, at least I felt about AI on my list. You had him over Scotty. D Wills did not. Why did you put Scotty above AI?
I think Scotty's impact on the defensive end just edged him out over Iverson. I think Scotty was a bit more efficient of a player that also edged him out over Iverson. The Iverson offensively was much better than Scotty, but, you know, Iverson is like that classic example of clogging stuff up. Okay, poor ball movement. I mean, he's that analogy you can throw in. You know, I like working with this guy, but, you know, sometimes he just does, you know, his ball movement isn't that great. He just doesn't well, you know, work well with others. You know, AI. So, you know, for those reasons, I put Scotty over him. You know, I like the way Scotty grew throughout his career. I like Scotty's consistency. You knew what he was, you know, you knew what you were going to get out of him. Play at a high level. I think Scotty, in terms of a player, his numbers would be better if he didn't play with Jordan, but he still put together pretty strong numbers to be 28 on my list.
All right. Now, I saw you had kind of a run on power forwards in the mid-20s there. You had McHale at 26, Hayes at 25, and KG at 24. Explain, how did that pecking order develop? You know, how did you determine who was the better of those three, and where to place those three?
Well, you know, Elvin Hayes was really interesting for me. I had him at 25, and actually I went back to a comment Ray had, I don't know, a year ago, 6 months ago or whatnot. You know, I said on the air, I was like, man, Elvin Hayes, I don't know much about him. And, you know, Ray kind of put me in, and I've seen him play a few times on Hardwood Classic since. yeah, this guy was tough. I mean, in terms of college, he's probably one of the top 5-10 college players ever. But his game was just amazing, you know, in terms of the style he played and just how he dominated certain matchups at that four position. Kevin McHale is a guy that I don't think I ever truly valued his game enough. But since I've gotten older and able to see some games that he played in, I mean, this guy was impossible to guard in the post. You know, he had an unblockable shot because of his long arms, and he was just he got the most of what he had. And Garnett, like you said, I put Garnett ahead of those two guys at 24 because I just think Garnett is the model of what we look for fours right now, you know, for big guys. You know, the ultimate big guys can do a little bit of what Garnett can do, you know, in his prime. And even now, you know, I mean, this guy is starting his 17th year in the league, and he's made the All-Star team the last 4 or 5 years. So, he's still making the All-Star team, even though his level of play has dropped, but he's still the best the league has to offer, you know, in terms of a top 3 or 4 guy in his position. Isaiah Thomas was a tough one for me. Growing up in Michigan, Isaiah was my favorite player growing up. I had him at 22. Initially, I had him as high as 15. And, you know, I heard that little voice in my head. I just had to keep moving him back. And he settled in at that, you know, high 20 mark.
Hello?
Hey, Ray, you still on with us, man.
I'm trying to get back. I got a call. I had to take it.
Hey, do what you
got to
do, man.
Yeah.
I just didn't want you putting your business on the radio.
Oh, out there? I'm sorry about that.
Yeah.
I'm trying to get a truck, man. That's real
okay.
Sports guy shit there.
Okay.
Truck.
Okay. PhD.
Yeah. You have a player at number 30 that neither D. Wills nor I have anywhere on our list. Speak on Nate Thurman for a moment, brother.
Nate Thurman was so good, okay, that the Warriors felt comfortable in trading Wilt Chamberlain to the Philadelphia. For three straight years, he averaged 20 and 20. And the thing I love about Nate Thurman, my dad, you know, we grew up in the Midwest, and we grew up in the same town as Western Michigan, MAC basketball, MAC football, Mid-American Conference. Nate Thurman had the opportunity to go, you know, he grew up in Akron, Ohio, had a chance to go to Ohio State. They had Jerry Lucas at the time, so he ended up at Bowling Green, a team in the MAC. And essentially, I mean, I remember as a kid going to see Western play and seeing all these MAC records. Thurman held just about all of them at that time in the 80s. He was just a dominant player. He didn't play at a marquee school. He kind of got lost in Golden State. But, again, for three straight years, he averaged 20 and 20, 20 points, 20 rebounds. So, you know, he's one of those guys we kind of talk about where, well, did his numbers stack up over the long haul? He had some down years. But for me, you know, I think that dominance was just so strong, it was tough for me to ignore it.
No, I agree. I'm looking at his numbers. I'm looking at his stats. Brother ain't bad, man. Brother's got this game.
Yeah,
you know, I might have missed one.
Yeah, I think, and he was in that next. And I actually played around, had him on the list. I have a few that I'm like, you know, if I were to rethink this now after hearing these conversations, he might be on the list and be even higher. And so I agree with your assessment. Sometimes we're going to have those folks who we have on the list that we might all have, but I can just agree that he's one of them. So I think that was a good assessment of him.
Yeah, I agree. So, yeah, man, I don't know if you got any issues with his list, D-Wills, but that's pretty solid, man.
Yeah, the Isaiah one is one that, for me, even though we're both from Michigan, I just feel like, you know, he's got the championship. I think in terms of just a dominant at his size and what he brought to the game at probably the peak age of NBA basketball. I see him in that 20 and up. You know, he could be anywhere on anybody's list. from that, but I see him in that top 20. So that would be one that I could probably argue, but I haven't seen the rest of your list.
Okay. Okay. So we're going to get into a new segment we call Off the Dome. This is our freestyle segment. I'm going to throw some topics at the fellas and just let them wax poetic about it off the top of their heads. This is no prep. They didn't get any preview. You know, it's not in a rundown or anything like that. So I'm going to give each guy a topic and just give me that visceral, right off the top of the head, right from the gut, right from the heart reaction. I'm going to throw this one to Ray. Brian Braun, is he on roids or not?
I'm going to say no. I think that the testing is going to be found to be faltered. What I understand is that he tested at twice the amount that anybody has ever tested at before, and he don't have the look. I mean, he would, if he has twice the level of testosterone that anybody else had ever tested at, he'd have hair on his eyeballs,
He's like a mongoloid.
I think that that somehow something has gone awry here, and I think that they're going to get down to some litigation on this one.
Okay.
Because I'm not making that kind of money and sitting down for 50 games if I didn't take steroids. So if I got to take a lie detector test, I want to subpoena everybody that was involved,
Okay, okay.
That would drag me down like that.
D. Wills, you're the Indianapolis coach, you're Bill Polian. Do you take Andrew Luck and trade Peyton Manning? Or do you keep them both? What do you do?
I take Andrew Luck and keep Peyton Manning and let him play for the next couple of years and, do what Green Bay did. I mean, I don't get caught up in all this other, he's ready to start now. Yeah, that's true. But, I got both of them. I'll take both of them. If Peyton get hurt again, I got somebody who can step right in. So I take
Even if you can get a bunch more pieces for Peyton?
If you could pull off a Herschel Walker deal, then I'll do it. If you like Dallas, you can pull that Herschel Walker off, he's gone. If somebody come with me with the right deal, he's gone.
Okay.
Pay for past performance. We'll go.
Okay. PhD. A lot of coaches getting pink slipped this week. Who's next?
Norv Turner.
A real sports guy's favorite, Norv Turner.
Right.
For those listeners out there, that's a bit of sarcasm.
Norv Turner's got to go. This guy, his team display is way too inconsistent. The last couple of years, I think with this group and with this leadership, I think they've maxed out. They've maxed out and they're starting to regress. So that whole organization needs a kick in the butt. I think this AJ, what's his name, AJ Smith, the GM, supposed to be great, but and I can't put the blame with him because they have talent. But something's just not clicking. So I think Norv's got to go. He's got to go fast.
All right. <Yeah.
laughs>
Bye, Norv. Ray, do the Packers pursue perfection? Should they do it is what I'm asking. Not can they should they do it?
I wouldn't at all. I don't care. I would let that Dolphins team have all the love. I'm not interested in being undefeated if it's at the risk of you go out and you try to win every game. Everybody starts. You don't hold anybody back, even after you clinch. But to, keep guys in there for too long, I'm not doing it.
Okay.
Can't do it.
No.
Wait. Hold on. Where's it at?
Cannot play with them. Cannot win with them. Cannot coach with them. Can't do it.
Can't do it.
All right. D. Wills.
Yes.
Miguel Cotto. Does he have a shot at securing a bout with another big name, whether it be can he get into the weight classes to get in the ring with a Mayweather or Pacquiao? Is that possible? Is that a possibility for him after spanking Margarito?
Yeah, I mean the way he beat Margarito, I think he can, you know, I think he could get in a fight with Pacquiao and or Mayweather. I think he's, you know, exercised some demons and really put together a nice fight. So I think he could be there, but, you know, he's going to have to wait. You know, it's probably not going to be for another, you know, maybe this time next year. So he's going to have to find a fight in between to keep himself busy. But I think he could, you know, if he can win another marquee fight, I think that's a good payday for folks.
All right. Last one, and then we're going to go into our dogs of the week. We'll pick up our pick six in the after-hours section for those of you, for the downloaders, but we're going to go to dogs of the week for the live listeners.
Do you want me to do my top 30? Do you want me to do my list or no?
Yeah, go ahead. Why don't you go ahead and throw that in there? We're going to stop here with the off the dome, and we're going to let D. Wills get into his top 30. So go ahead and go through 30 through 21.
All right, I'm going to be shocked at some people here with this one. Okay, so at 30, Kevin Garnett. At 29, LeBron. At 28, Reggie Miller.
Mm.
27, Dirk. At 26, David Robinson. At 25, Kevin McHale. 24, Rick Barry. 23, Stockton. 22, Pete Maravich. And then Havlicek. At
21. Woo-hoo-hoo! Okay. You got to explain the bottom three. Well, not KG, but why LeBron so low?
Well, part of it, LeBron is one of the few, I would say, young stars that I have on this list. And I said there's no argument about his attributes as a player. And I think it probably came from what Ray just talked about. I just felt like, for LeBron, for me right now, I need to see another 2 or 3 years of his work. Because some of the people I have ahead of him have demonstrated in big-time games, even when we talk about Reggie Miller and things like that, just something that is part of my dog meter. And so in terms of LeBron statistically over his first, you know, 4 or 5 years in the league, I mean, you can make a lot of good arguments about his performance. I just felt at this point when I'm looking at this 50 – current players, there's a couple of them I just needed to see a little bit more work for me to even get them into that top 20. I thought, for me right now, this is where I got LeBron. He gets a ring this year, he might jet up my list even farther. But I need to see some more work from him, aside from all the other attributes he has.
Okay. And then there's the one, Reginald Wayne Miller. explain that one to me, brother.
Yeah, I mean, and put a strong explanation with it, please.
what I love about Reggie Miller, I think, is amazing. Is with the way he was able to lead his team, be an incredible, impactful player, scorer, whatever, lead his team. Given even some of the limitations he had was amazing, but he's one of the most clutch players in NBA history. He, for the time he was one of the top players in the league, feared every night. You know, I think Reggie it was respected by all of his contemporaries, and he played against, in a time where there were a lot of great players. Even people like MJ respected Reggie's game.
This high, though?
28, I think 28 is fine.
What's that?
I think there was ever a time with Reggie Miller that he came in the top three in MVP voting, or should have come in the top three of MVP voting, any time in his career.
I think there were several times when Jordan won, you could have made a case for Reggie being an MVP candidate. And Reggie had MVP years. He was competitive on this. But he played in an era when he played with Jordan. A lot of people came in second to Jordan. So, I mean, that whole entire era, we got some people that we talk about championships who didn't get championships because Jordan. That's why Jordan is very high on most of our list. So when you talk about MVP during that time.
Now, question if Reggie ever came in second or third or fourth to Jordan.
In my mind,
Did Pippen ever come in first, yes, second, or third?
He wasn't even in it. Yes, ever. And we're making arguments about Pippen.
But Pippen had a complete game. Pippen had a complete game. All right, Reggie had 1 year where he averaged 4 assists.
It doesn't matter. We talk about dominant players of his time. You don't start with Pippen. Reggie was one of the iconic players of his time.
No, he was not. Reggie had 2 years in his whole career where he averaged over 22 points a game.
Reggie,
from a guy who was just pretty much a scorer.
Ray Allen,
22. You can't
even put it. You talk about playoff performances, games. Reggie carried him.
Okay, so then where's Robert Horry on your list?
Robert Horry isn't even the same number as Reggie.
In the playoffs, he is.
You can't argue. No, he's not. Reggie. What? When you talk about the man, you ask anybody that time, they would give you Reggie was the man.
Man, Reggie in the 20s. I'll give you Reggie in the 40s. Reggie in the 20s, you was drinking cognac when you made
choices. You got Ginobili on the list. Hell no.
I got Ginobili at 49.
I got Ginobili at 48.
You got Reggie, right.
Reggie can go with that.
You got Reggie steeped into your 20s, man.
And Reggie belongs on that list of maybe the top 10 or 20 players you'd like to see play, you know, but not necessarily on the top 50, you know. And I think that that should be a list after these lists go through, you know, because there's a lot of players that you would have loved to see, you know, you just like to watch. And Reggie was always one of those players you loved to watch him play, you know. World Be Free. I love to watch him play. He's not making anybody's top 50 list, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to compare those two, but I mean, that's, you know, Reggie's on somebody's, you know, he's obviously on D's list, but, you know, I used to love to watch Reggie
now,
never play basketball. Yeah,
Reggie was borderline for me. Like, he was borderline for me just because he's an amazing shooter, one of the greatest shooters ever, and I'll give him that. One of the greatest shooters ever, whether you look at any percentage, free throw, three-point, field goal percentage. You know, for the first 5 or 6 years of his career, he was around 50% from the field. Back in the day when cats could grab you, put their hands all over you, he was still shooting 50% from the field. The big thing for me was he didn't do much else. You know,
his team to 6 Eastern Conference Finals from a team that was nothing. Took his team to 6 in
But that was when the East was, I mean, that was when the East was weak.
No,
outside of the Bulls, the East was not hopping.
What do you mean? I can't even argue. That's Reggie's one I'll ride and die with. I don't know.
I have a question for you. So Pistol Pete was an interesting guy. I had Pistol Pete at 42 on my list. Marcus had him at 36. You had Pistol Pete at 25, at 22, which I think is justified. I'm interested to hear your reasoning there.
Well, let me go, because I don't jump off my list and went back in there. For me, I think Pistol Pete, and I know Ray and I argued a little bit about this, but I felt like Pistol Pete was I think a legitimate kind of game changer when he was in the league. I thought he had a great impact in the league. I think when you look at list, he's often at, you know, that high. I didn't think he should be in the top 20, but I thought I had people who I felt like when they in the league had an impact to the game, had fear when people played him. Whenever you hear his contemporaries talk about him in a way, they talk about him in a way that other folks, even in that time, don't even talk about other folks of their time. And so I think for me, in terms of his ability and his impact on the game when he was in, that's someone I thought was very high on the list. Some lists had him higher. I didn't feel like when I get into my top 20, it's a different group of folks that I have in my top 20, and I didn't think he was that kind of person. So I didn't put him that high. So he's much higher on my list. And part of it's where I am versus I think where y'all might be in terms of the group of people that I highlight. And I think he's one of those people for me who was on the edge or someone that I really thought had a big time impact in the game.
Okay.
Now we see a lot of Raider agreement for Kevin McHale, Rick Barry, and Garnett. All three of us have them within one spot of each other in terms of where we rated them, you know, right there in that mid-20s. So, I mean, it seems like we're all kind of on the same page there.
Yeah, McHale was such a different, because he had different parts of his career where he was the dominant sixth man and a starter. You know, they talk about you taking people into the torture chamber. You know, he was one of the hardest guys to guard. I mean, all of his contemporaries talked about it. I used to hate watching him play against our teams. He used to go to work, and you could see him going to work in any league. Certain players, you can say wherever you put them in time, they're going to go to work. He's one of those cats who would go to work, you know, step the long wingspan, all that stuff. McHale's an interesting guy, and that's why I think he would end up at different parts on a lot of people's lists because of whatever lens you're looking at. You know, there's some people who might make an argument to push him even higher in terms of just his impact on the game.
Okay. So that we'll pick that up next week, and we'll keep that rolling. We'll keep the list rolling. Man, Reggie, I don't know about Reggie that high, but it's your list.
and I knew Reggie. I said Reggie gonna cause some people. I got a couple people cause some people heartburn. I had a feeling that Reggie was gonna do that.
Reggie at 28? Hell yeah! Absolutely. All right, so for our pick six this week, all right, we got three NFL games, three college basketball games. First NFL game, New England versus the Fighting Tebows. In the words of Phil D, Tebow been good to me. Tebow been good to everybody, man. Again, what the hell is going on? Again, why is it not working? Go ahead, Ray.
I didn't see D's pick on this, and you know how I hate to pick with D, but I don't see Tebow beating New England. I'm sorry, fellas, I just don't see that. I don't see Belichick allowing that to happen. In fact, I see New England running up the score on their ass. Just to make sure it doesn't happen. You know, I don't see Tebow in Denver beating New England. I just don't see it. I think New England is going to Denver and just beat his ass. Because it ain't going to be about the New England defense against Tebow. It's going to be Belichick. And Belichick is just going to have them boys just slapping him around and just driving him nuts. I think Belichick this week is going to be like, all right, that's enough. You had your little run, you made a little noise, but this is football, and I think New England is going to beat the hell out of Denver.
yes. I'm taking New England in this one as well. Shit's got to stop at some point. That's all I got. This shit has got to stop. Somebody please make it stop. I can't take it no more, man. If this dude win another game, he beat the Bears last week. The team is dear to my heart. You know, I don't know, man. Marion Barber running out of bounds, fumbling. It's one of those things, right?
That's why I think Belichick will run the score up on him, because it's like he's not going to let it get to the fourth quarter and give him a chance, because the shit could happen. And then he got that, you know, he got that plane ride home, you know. Belichick, I can see him scoring like 75 points. You know,
Belichick better run the score up, because otherwise he's going to be sitting there looking like Rex Ryan.
Right, exactly.
But he got Tebow.
Exactly. Yeah. You know.
Cussing in front of the camera, Rex.
Yeah.
All kinds of profanity coming out of his mouth. I fell out.
Really? You got to, man. You sitting over there like, how did we lose to this prehistoric ass offense?
It's like
to the fucking wing tee.
He dropped some.
Wasn't
beer.
That the game he went with like 6'9", 6'12" passing? You know,
yeah.
He got beat by a quarterback when 6'12". Please.
Yeah.
We'd all be cussing.
If you look at those stats before the game and you say, Rex, the quarterback you're going to face tonight is going to go 2-for-9 passing, you think you win the game? Say, hell, fuck yeah, I'm going to win.
Yeah.
Little do you know, it's Tim Tebow. Oh, okay.
Well, I'm going with New England. I think they're going to run a hurry-up offense. I think they're going to pick the temple up, and I think Brady's going to run no huddle and pick the temple up and really put pressure on the defense.
I think
that's
where
they're
going to go about it. Yeah, D-Wills, who you taking?
I'm taking Denver.
Okay.
And, I think Brady gets hurt in this game.
Damn.
I saw that.
Damn, man,
you've been
talking to God, too?
Don't say that.
Not only did he predict a win, he's like, and Brady's getting hurt. I already got the memo.
I'm going to see
Revelation 7:14.
I'm going to see Miss Rudolph. I'm pulling a Richard Pryor. We're going to go see Miss Rudolph.
Hey. This is the X factor, though. If it's snowing, Denver's going to if the weather is bad, Denver's going to win. That's all Tebow needs is a snow moment.
Brady's a good bad-weather quarterback. He's good in that.
Brady is a good bad-weather quarterback, but that defense is not a bad-weather defense.
Yeah. But you see what Brady did to Chicago in the snow.
Oh, yeah, no, Brady's gonna do his thing. The key is will the New England defense put up enough fight to just continue to keep it close? Because that defense is really bad. Now, Belichick is going to scheme his ass off. He's going to have something for Tebow. But that defense is really bad.
It's going to be Belichick. You're going to see blitzes coming. This kid is going to be on the run. Chicago had Denver until the last 5 minutes of the ball game, and then they started doing things that played right.
Jesus intervened.
That's what everybody said. The Jets had Denver. WTs had Denver.
San Diego had Denver.
And then something happens. Then
Jesus intervened.
That's right. But they had him, but they didn't have him 14 points up or 21 points up. That's why I said Belichick is going to score in the first quarter, and then by the time the end of the game rolls around, you're going to start feeling sorry for Denver. Because now it's like, you know, 53-6, you know, and everybody going like, and everybody going to be hollering at Denver's sideline going, what team are going to do now? What are you going to do now?
Somebody going to hold up a sign. God took the weekend off. God's on his bye week.
He's like Red Fox said, you know, it's something when you make a man change his God.
Oh, man. All right, next game, Pittsburgh at San Francisco. Now, you talk about injuries, Phil. This is going to be some injuries coming out of this game because both of these teams are hella physical. I'm taking San Francisco at home on this one. Phil T, who are you taking?
I'm going to go with San Francisco as well.
Okay. D. Wills, who you got?
It pains me. Nah, I got Roethlisberger with a bad foot. Can't do it. Can't go against it. I'm going with the Steelers. I got to ride with my boys.
Cannot play with them. Cannot win with them. Cannot coach with them. Can't do it.
Oh, man. All right, so you going with the Steelers?
Gotta go with them.
All right, next game. Ray, did you weigh in? Who you got, Ray?
No, I'll take San Francisco as well. If Ben wasn't hurt, it'd be a different ball game. But I think they're gonna chase after Ben pretty good. All
right. Now we got Baltimore at San Diego, North's last stand. I'm taking Baltimore. Phil, you took San Diego?
Yeah, man, these guys are so unpredictable.
This is true. This was a hard one for me. I gotta go. Between Rivers and Flacco, you got a doo-doo sandwich. D-Will, who you taking?
I'm going with San Diego because it's just like San Diego start winning when they out of contention. So I'm going with San Diego to make it interesting for Norv, even though you know he's going to get fired. It just can't end the way it should be in.
Exactly.
Patrick Byrne would make it obvious, but they're going to win a couple games, and people are going to say, you got to think about it.
And not only are they going to win some games, they're going to blow people like that. I wouldn't be surprised if Baltimore won, but I also wouldn't be surprised if they lost by 30.
Yeah.
And because San Diego will do that. Like, San Diego, again, you don't know what you're getting with these dudes, man. You just don't know. Ray, who you taking?
I think it's North's last stand. Give me Baltimore.
All right. Now, moving into the college basketball games, we have Memphis at Louisville. Memphis has been kind of sliding a little bit, but this is a rivalry game. They both get after each other. I'm taking Louisville, though, at home. I think Louisville's press is strong, and Pitino going to have them boys ready. And Memphis is good, but they're a little young, and young teams don't do well on the road. Example, Kentucky. So I'm going with Louisville. Phil, who'd you take in this one?
I'm going with Louisville. I think they got a very talented team.
Yeah. All right. D. Wills.
I'm going with Pitino at the house. Yeah, you don't mess with Pitino at home. Pitino
okay.
at home.
Ray, who you taking?
Let's make it a foursome. I agree.
All right. Now we got Texas A&M going into Florida. Florida's loaded, man. Bradley Beal is a young Ray Allen, a little bit more explosive, I think, than Ray was even when Ray was younger. Patrick Young is a nice 4-5. I think they got a couple pros on that Florida team. I don't think Texas A&M has any. Florida may have one of the best backcourts in the country, so I'm going with Florida. Ray, who you taking?
Is that Florida?
All right.
It's they're playing in Florida? Yeah.
They at Florida. Yeah. Phil, who you taking?
We'll go with Florida. Just a side note, you know, I live in the St. Louis area. I saw Bradley Beal play as a junior. Okay? This kid was 4-for-6 for the field, 2 dunks, 2 threes. He finished with 42 points. He made over 30 free throws.
Damn.
I mean, he was that explosive off the dribble playing the point guard, and we haven't even seen that yet from him
in
Florida. I mean, this kid has an amazing first step, but yet he's a shooter. So I take Florida, and if they can figure out a way to get all this talent to play together, get some quality play in the post, this is going to be a really good, nice play for the tournament.
All right, we're going to parlay that. then we got Notre Dame and Indiana in-state rivalry. D-Wills. Yeah, who you taking, D-Wills?
I'm taking Florida. I haven't seen Texas A&M play, but I'm impressed. This is the first Florida team that resembles the team he had when he went to the back-to-back championship. So
yeah.
It seems like he's getting his talent back up.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, he's got a good squad. This is one of those sleeper teams that I think by the end of the season, everybody's going to be hot on them. We'll see if they can survive SEC play with no injuries. That's going to be the big key if this team can stay healthy, man. Like you said, Phil, this is going to be that play, that dark horse in the tourney. Now, Notre Dame at Indiana, out of Hoosiers back. Big win at the buzzer over number one Kentucky last week at Assembly Hall. Can they keep it rolling? D. Wills, who you got? Notre Dame or Indiana?
I like Indiana. I mean, they, you know, not just at the buzzer, but I like the way they play. They get after it. Again, I think this is the first Indiana team I feel like in a while that's kind of got all the tools coming to, coming together. They get after it, so I like Indiana building on it. And so I'll go with the Hoosiers.
All right, Phil.
Hoosiers.
All right, Ray.
Hoosiers.
I'm going the other way. I'm going Notre Dame. Remember, this is a young team. That was a huge victory for those kids in that program. I think they're going to have a letdown. I think it's a trap game, whatever you want to call it. I think they're going to get caught off guard a little bit. They're going to have a little bit of a hangover from that big win against Kentucky. So I'm going Notre Dame. All right, dogs of the week. My dog of the week, where the Coastal Carolina coach at? Where they got at? Come on, man. Check in with us for a second.
We need more dogs.
Dale Demps. Why did I choose Dale Demps? Because he's putting up with a bunch of BS, and he's keeping it together, man. If I was him, man, I would walk into David Stern's office and slap him. So, Dale Demps is my dog of the week for not slapping David Stern. All right. So, Phil T.
We need more dogs.
My dog of the week is a bit overdue. I'm rolling with Miguel Cotto. I mean, he whooped Margarito. I mean, he whooped him like he stole something. And, you know, I texted that to Devon, and Devon came back to me and said, you know, he did steal something. He stole his legacy. And,
right.
You know, I forgot that. When Cotto got beat with those loaded gloves, alleged loaded gloves, he was undefeated. He was on that trajectory to be the next great boxer. And after that, he lost to Pacquiao. And, I mean, Cotto beat him down. He did. And he looked really disappointed when they stopped the fight because he wanted to give it to Margarito for another couple of rounds. So that's my dog of the week. I gained a lot of respect for that dude.
Okay. D. Wills.
We need more dogs.
I support that, Cotto. And my, sorry about that. My is still in boxing is Lamont Peterson over Amir Khan because everybody was billing Amir Khan as the next second coming. Freddie Roach was talking about him, trying to set up a big fight. And I think we talked about this. I think to come in under that, and I know Lamont Peterson has been kind of battling, trying to get to that back to that elite level, but to be somebody like Amir Khan who has that is a great feat right now, given where he is. And the other thing is Xavier in Cincinnati.
Hey,
that was
a real ass fight, man. That wasn't like one of them NBA fights where cats pretend like they gonna swing on each other or just start swinging at the air. Nah, them boys was connected. They don't like each other. I think we all know that now.
They were hitting coaches. That was one of them Summit Park back at the house. Everybody in Michigan and Ann Arbor know that. That's one of them. Whatever your park is. Where everybody ball at, you know, a fight has broken out that you thought you needed to call police about. That was one of them type fights.
Yeah, where an accident happens is people's passing by goosenecking. You know, the rubberneck is passing by causing an accident to fight so big. Yeah, man, that was a brawl. There was no ifs, ands, or buts about that. That was a straight brawl. But
we need more dogs.
I mean, people forget that these two schools are in the same city.
Exactly.
Sure.
Exactly.
Right. That's right.
Yeah. So I'm sure that won't be the last time them cats run into each other either.
Yeah. You know, I was explaining this to my wife. I was like, these cats. I mean, they be at the same parties. They probably
right.
share the same groupies.
Oh yeah, there was some picked up groupie angst in there.
That's probably why they're fighting.
Right.
Well, that was gonna be my dogs of the week. You know, I think that I like the Cincinnati coach. You know how he tried to pull it together after the game. You know, he talked about taking everybody's jersey, actually physically pulling the jersey off one player.
Yeah.
You know, he's just like, you know, you can't have that.
You really can't.
There's just no place for that. You know, this. You can't tweet, you know, before the game and then take it personal. You know, you can't get so upset. Go out on the court and just play the ball game and let that be it. And laugh at them on the way out. You know, you got to, you know, the reason this fight was as tough as it was is because these aren't grown-ass men. You know, these are young boys, you know. An NBA player ain't going to hit nobody that hard and break his hand and lose that money. You know, these young guys don't have a whole lot to lose. So that's why, you know, you saw it as a brawl that it was. But, you know, it's really kind of ridiculous. You know, because somebody tweeted about you. No doubt
it's ridiculous.
You know, somebody tweeted about you, about how you wouldn't start for them. You know, that's going to be a fight at the game. No, I'm going to go out there and burn you for 25, you know.
Right.
I'm going to call every one of you out. You know, you go tell me I'm not going to start on your team. I'm coming down calling numbers, you know. You know, you come on over here. Come on over here. And how you want me to do this to you?
Right, how you want this one?
You want me to dunk on you? You want
on the block? What you want?
I'm surgical with this, Jake. I'm surgical with it.
That's my movie. I'm going to have to get that. Oh, you got me. That's my movie right there, man. Training Day. That's my movie, man. I watch that every day senior year. Oh, man. Well, fellas, that is our show. So, hey, this is the after-hours portion for the downloaders. You got the whole show. Man, we took y'all for another half hour, so be happy. Thank Tebow, and God bless you. All right, fellas, I'm out.
All right, good night.
All right. Take care.